your host and the executive director of the DC Small Business Development Center. And unfortunately, my co-host, Sharon Morton, can't be in here today with us, but she'll be back in the studio next week, and we'll be looking forward to seeing her and listening to her. So one of the things, or one of the ways that we can help small businesses here on the Small Business Report is by promoting the Small Business Development Centers. There are 63 lead centers around the country, and then we have satellite offices as well in every state. Almost 1,000 small business development centers are here for you. So if you need help with your business, please reach out to America's Small Business Development Center. That's America's with an S, Small Business Development Center, or SBDC.org, and you can find a SBDC near you. Coming up on today's show, we're going to have two really good guests. And our first one on the first segment is Mr. Gopal Berger. He is a partner at the Berger, Gray, and Jaffe law firm in New York City. And we are so happy to have him here. This is a dynamic corporate boutique law firm comprised of highly experienced and diverse attorneys that counsel clients ranging from startups to Fortune 100 companies on a wide range of complex business issues. So get your pen and paper out and to take notes, because Mr. Berger will have some really good legal advice for your business. And on the second half of the show, we will welcome back our good friend, Mr. Ron Busby, President and CEO of the U.S. Black Chambers of Commerce. He is just back from a couple of trips to Africa and Asia, and he will be sharing information on how you could do business with these countries and other important small business news. So right now we're going to take a quick break, so please stay tuned on the Small Business Report on HUR Voices, Sirius XM channel 141. Now, this is Carl Brown, your host on the Small Business Report. We have Mr. Gopal Berger of the Berger, Gray, Jaffe law firm in the studio with us today. So welcome to the Small Business Report, Mr. Gopal Berger.
Thank you, Carl. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Believe me, it's too many businesses always asking us for legal advice. And we don't necessarily give legal advice. We send them to the DC pro bono. And that's what many of our state offices do. They send them to the pro bono office to get that legal advice, or they might have a list of corporate lawyers that they would send them to. So it is a pleasure to have you here in the studio so we can talk about businesses and law. So with that, the first question.
One of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So the first question we got for you is, do all businesses need a business license to operate?
Well, Carl, let me start out by saying the information I'm about to convey is not exactly legal advice, because each person's individual circumstance will vary, and so you need to consult with an attorney who can give you advice based on your individual set of circumstances. I'm about to provide you with some useful legal-related information, but not necessarily legal advice.
Okay.
Now, do all businesses need a business license? The answer is no. Whether you need a license will vary depending on the type of business that you're going to be in. You know, some businesses are regulated and require a license, others are not. You know, so if, for example, if you're in the business of selling liquor, you're going to need a license to do that. If you're in certain medical fields, you're going to need a license to do that. Other fields, you may not need a license to it. You start a tech company, which may not need a license. So it depends on your jurisdiction of organization as well as the kind of business that you're in.
Right. And we have in the district a Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs. And if you're a business owner, you could just call them and find out, or go to their website and you can find out if you need a license for your specific business. And like the example that Mr. Berger just gave of an IT company not needing one, but someone that cuts hair will need a license to cut hair.
That's right.
Yeah. So one of our other questions that we get a lot of is, what is the best business structure that a company can have or start out with, like an LLC, a C-Corp, or an S-Corp, and what are the benefits of each structure?
Well, what structure is best for you is really going to depend on your individual circumstances and business objectives in terms of tax, management flexibility, and so forth and so on. So, you know, in short, you know, an LLC or an S-Corp, you know, has the benefit of allowing a single level taxation, whereby the entity's income is not taxed at the entity level, but is basically passed through and taxed at the individual level at your individual tax rate. C-Corp, or any other corporation for that matter, as a structural matter, is more formalistic and doesn't provide you with the same level of sort of dynamic ability to slice and dice management functions and duties and so forth, and to put it, you know, in simple terms. You know, in a corporation, a share is a share, and it entitles everybody that owns a share to the same thing. In an LLC, you can vary that.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, now, what you know, my business is about to get started, or we're up and running. Should I have a operating agreement or, you know, bylaws? Are those important for my business?
Absolutely. In fact, I was having a conversation earlier today, Carl, about that very same thing, and how so many businesses, you know, while they're starting out and they're in this comfort zone, you know, as among business partners, in the beginning you're all friends and everything is great, and you can't envision a situation where you'll ever disagree and things will get sour. But it invariably happens. And so the point where you want to define your relationship with your business partners in detail is up front when you're actually in a position to agree on these things. And when you fail to do that and then things happen later on, if you haven't put these things in place, then you end up with results that you may not like, because you're defaulting to statutory provisions that may not fit the situation the way in which you like. And in fact, in many instances, you end up litigating because you cannot agree on what should happen in this situation, either because things have gone particularly sour or because business is so great and, you know, people all of a sudden have amnesia and they think about things differently because, you know, now when I started out, I thought this was just going to be a small business, you know, making a little bit of money on the side or whatever. And now this thing turns out to be a wildly successful thing, and I want more. You know, I want to be the guy, I want to be the face, or the other person want to be the guy, I want to be the face. And you know, you have differences around management and you know, split, the income split and that kind of thing. And it's hard to agree in those circumstances.
Oh yeah, when you're fighting.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so like, you want to spell those things out up front, which is what you do in your operating agreement, your shareholders agreement, or your bylaws. You know, these things will basically is where you define rights and responsibilities and management and so forth and so on.
I think that is wonderful. I think I hope the audience is listening, because like you said, in the beginning it's a love fest. And while you're all in love, go ahead and put this stuff on paper, because when it hits the fan, and it will eventually, like you said, you're either going to blow
ugly.
Up.
Yeah. It's ugly. It's often just like a divorce.
Right. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. So with that being said, do businesses have to protect the name of their business? And if so, how is that done?
For some businesses, their name, their brand, their intellectual property is probably their biggest asset. For others, maybe not so much. If you're one of those businesses where your name, your brand, your intellectual property is a significant asset, then you want to protect that. And one of the ways in which you do that is by trademarking your name or your logo. so that you have an exclusive right to use that. For other intellectual property, there are other ways to protect that. I mean, you have, you know, trade secrets, you have patents, you have trademarks, copyright. But in terms of your name and brand, logo, whatever you use to identify yourself, the typical way to protect that would be through a trademark registration with the U.S. Trademark Office.
Yeah, and I'm gonna give a bit of advice and information to our audience right now. On the campus of Howard University, we have a Patent and Trademark Resource Center. So they can come up here and we can help them get a trademark or a patent. And unfortunately for you, it will cut down on the amount of money they need a lawyer. But
look, I mean, at the end of the day, what we care about, Carl, most is that people get the help that they need.
Exactly.
Whether they get it from me or they get it from somewhere else. The important thing is that they get the resources that they need to make informed decisions and to protect themselves.
No, we always advocate for our small businesses to get people like you, to have a lawyer, have an accountant, maybe not on retainer, but to know them so that if they did have a problem, they can go and get that resource real easy, and that the person behind the scene is familiar with the company in some shape or form, so that they're not starting from scratch, you know, and if when people get sued, that's when they're running to you anyway.
Typically, that's the case, although we try to, tell people that you want to be proactive, and you know, prevention is better than cure, but should you not heed that advice and you get sued, then yes, we're here for you.
Right, right. So how does a business ensure legal compliance?
In short, hire a lawyer. it's funny, but the fact is there's no other way to really tackle that beast, because if you try to do it without professionals that can help you navigate the myriad legal and regulatory landscape, then inevitably you get yourself in hot water, especially if you're in a highly regulated space.
Especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've seen it often. One of the things, like I said, we advocate, you know, having attorneys and accountants and all that. We also tell them that they should have those kinds of folks on their advisory board so that their advisors are way familiar, in-depth familiar with your business. And then when you need that legal help or accounting or HR or whatever type of technical assistance you need that you don't have those skill sets, they're already there, you know. And yes, you do, little businesses, small businesses, you must pay for those services.
That's right. I mean, it's very tempting in the beginning when your resources are very limited to dispense with professional services like accountants and lawyers. But more often than not, you pay a very high price on the back end for dispensing with that stuff on the front end.
All right.
And so it's one of the things I advise my clients all the time. Listen, think about the importance of your business to you and what that means from a cost standpoint, cost-benefit standpoint, you know. What you'll pay today to protect your business going forward will be a relatively small amount compared to what you'll pay if you don't do that and you find yourself in hot water where you have to fix a problem as opposed to prevent one.
All right. Well, we got to go to commercial break real quick. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Small Business Report on SiriusXM, Channel 141. This is Carl Brown, your host. All right. Okay, we only got 12 more minutes.
No,
11 minutes.
We're doing pretty
12.
Good.
We got 12 minutes.
We're doing good.
Yeah. So we got up to what type of contracts do businesses need to or should have in place.
What number is that?
That's right there.
Number, looks like we're more than halfway through.
Yeah, we're about halfway through.
Yeah, we're doing good.
So, yeah. Welcome back to the Small Business Report on SiriusXM Channel 141. This is Carl Brown, your host. And in the studio with me today is Mr. Gopal Berger. And we were just talking about compliance, but we're going to fast forward into what types of contracts do businesses need or should have in place?
Very, very important question there, Carl. The type of contracts that you'll need will vary depending on the business that you're in. But contracts are very important because they define relationships. You know, they're like sort of constitutions for business relationships, right? Or roadmaps for business relationships. And so, you know, you'll need, you know, any business will need, for example, contracts between the business and its employees. You'll need contracts between the business and its clients. You'll need contracts between the business and its supplier network. You need contracts between business partners that define those relationships, as well as contracts for various other kinds of relationships. So depending on the kind of business that you're in, there are certain contracts that are sort of common throughout businesses, such as, you know, employment-related contracts. But for others, it depends on the kind of business that you're in. But those are sort of typical contractual arrangements that most businesses will need to tackle.
I love it, because no more napkin contracts, please.
That's right. That's how people get into trouble. You know, it's tempting to do handshake deals because they're easy. And again, you know, in the beginning, you know, everyone's friendly. But the problem is with the lack of detail. And some people's memories, you know, fade quickly, intentionally or not so intentionally, as the circumstances warrant. And so that's the problem with handshake deals. I mean, obviously, verbal contracts are valid contracts in many instances, but the problem is you rarely are in a position to prove them.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, it creates more problems than is warranted when you could have easily documented your arrangement.
Exactly. Write it down, type it up, and sign it.
That's right.
So, is it okay to use personal assets to run a business?
Well, what I'll say about that, Carl, is you don't want to mingle your personal assets with your business assets. Obviously, if you're starting a business, you got to get capital from somewhere, and often that's out of your own pocket. But funds that you are assets that you're contributing to the business should be formally contributed and then treated as business assets. So, you know, if you're putting in money, then you decide whether or not you're putting in that money in the form of a loan to the business or in the form of equity whereby you get back shares or interest. And then it becomes business property after that. And what you're entitled to is either, in the case of a loan, repayment, or in the case of equity, you're entitled to whatever profits and distributions of profits later on. But what you probably shouldn't do is mingle your personal assets with your business assets. And for example, it's ill-advisable in many instances to, say, run your business on a personal credit card. You know, if you need to utilize, revolving balance credit, such as a credit card, then the recommendation would be to get a credit card in the name of the business and segregate your personal assets and your personal liabilities from those of the business. Sometimes you can get into trouble by disregarding corporate and other organizational formalities. And, you know, in certain circumstances, that could lead to, you know, a court deciding to ignore what they call piercing the corporate veil and basically disregarding the limited liability protection of the entity and basically leaving you exposed personally for, you know, business liability because you disregarded the corporate formalities and otherwise treated the business as if you and the business were one and the same. And
yeah.
So you want to be very careful about that.
And then you're on the hook for all of that money.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's not okay then. So what are some of the common risks that businesses should guard against?
common risk? Well, we touched on a few of them earlier, Carl. One is, you want to guard against, being too casual about your business to the point where you don't document your relationships in the right way, utilizing contracts, where you don't formalize your business organizational documents, such as enter into a limited liability company operating agreement or bylaws or so forth, or shareholders agreement, whereby you specify how decisions are to be made, management is to be carried out and structured. And so when you don't do that, you end up in situations that can cost you dearly in terms of litigation costs because of disputes that arise later and there's no roadmap to settling them, or the roadmaps or statutory roadmaps that are inadequate to deal with the situation, or provide results that are unacceptable to the parties.
I can say one thing. There should be a line of folks outside of your door when you get back to New York seeking your service, because you have laid it down. So could you please give the audience your contact information, because they need to know who to come to save them.
So it's pretty simple. We're a New York City-based law firm, although we have a presence here in D.C., but our main number is 646-513-3231. Again, that's 646-513-3231. And you can also visit our website at www.burghergray.com. That's burghergray.com.
Great. So with that, what are some of the common risks that businesses, we went over that, but what are some of the ways that a business owner can obtain financing for their business?
Financing can come in many different forms and flavors and from different sources. So you may have, for example, with a brand new business starting out, what they call family and friends financing. So you start with your own money, typically, and then as the need for more capital arises, you branch out into friends and family, and from there you might go to what they often call an angel investor, and then from there eventually to an institutional or venture capital source, and somewhere later down the line you become more ripe for what is traditional bank financing. So it depends on where you are at your stage of development and the kind of capital that you need, but the sources are varied, and so depending on where you are and what source you want to tap into, but that's another area where you also want to make sure that you're documenting properly.
Yeah, I was just
kind
of going
into
that.
Financing.
Yeah. So with the, I've heard a lot of businesses say, we started out with friends and family. What kind of documents do they need to get that, put down so that they know that they have to pay these people back? Because like you said, people forget, get amnesia, when it's convenient, et cetera. So
that's right. Again, no handshake deals. So the papering depends on the kind of financing, right? So if it's a loan, then you want to get back paper documenting that it's a loan. Typically, that's a promissory note of some sort. It can get a little more complex than that, but in a simple situation, a promissory note should suffice that details the terms of the financing, the amount you're putting up, the principal amount, the interest rate, the term, when it's due, when it matures, and when you need to get paid back. It may be somewhat more sophisticated document like a convertible note. Starts out, very much as debt, but, there's an option there to convert that into equity, based on some trigger event. And then you have straight equity, common equity. You're buying shares. There's no obligation to repay you anything. You're basically thrown in your lot where, if the business makes money and there's a profit, you get to share in that based on your relative percentage of profits. But it's not... It's not so much a IOU, if you will. You sink or swim with the business.
Yeah, and you know what? I've heard a lot of entertainers are now going into that type of a deal. They don't want a payment up front because on the back end they can get more than just a check.
That's right. You know, because as an owner, you know, you participate in profits, right? You also participate in any downside.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the risk, right? You know,
if things
go well, you do well, and if they don't go well, then you know you also participate in that risk, and because of that, the upside, you know, potential is uncapped, generally, and the downside, you know, potential is usually capped at what you put in because of limited liability, assuming that you utilize a proper form for that. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's the nature of it. Depends on the risk you want to take. You know, you want to play it safe and get a specified interest rate and a promise to pay you back principal, then you're capped at, you know, your interest rate and the return of your principal. And, you know, if you want to, you know, be a baller and take bigger risk, then you take equity.
That's right. That's right. So please give out your website again and your phone number because we got to wrap up. I told you it was quick.
I guess time flies when you're having fun.
That's right.
But again, pleasure being here in the studios with you, Carl, and you know, I could think of no better way to spend you know, the last 22 or so minutes. You know, but realizing the limitation of time, if anyone needs to reach me after this, they can reach us at www.burghergray.com. Again, that's burghergray.com or 646-513-3231.
And we got to wrap up. This is Carl Brown. You're listening to the Small Business Report. We'll be right back.
Very good.
22 quick minutes. I'm sorry.
No need to apologize. You did that very well.
We'd love to have it back, though, man, because, I mean, you crushed it, you know.
Well, I'd love to come back and chat with you on this or some other subject.
Yeah, I mean, this was great because I can't tell you how many people come in to us looking for, you know, assistance in the legal field, and we're like, yo, whoa, we can't give you that kind of, I'm not a lawyer. You know, everybody in my shop has got an MBA or a doctorate, but no lawyers. And we did have two JD MBA students interning, and they couldn't give law legal advice, mm-hmm. but they would give you common business advice, you know, on how to address a situation. But we would always tell them, you know, go to the pro bono clinic, and mm-hmm. and if you're not gonna pay for it,
right.
Go to the pro bono.
And you know. We work with, as you noted before, wide, you know, our clients span startups to Fortune 100s. You know, we try not to concentrate too heavily on the small side.
Right, 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 exactly.
But, you know, but part of our business strategy is to nurture promising, you know, emerging businesses, startups, you know, and sort of grow with them because, you know, these days, as you well know, the trajectory from startup to, you know, publicly traded company is a very different trajectory than it was, you know,
yeah.
20 years ago.
Really?
And
or
so you
even
can
30
have,
years
you know, 30
ago.
Years ago. So
yeah.
You can have companies move from startup to publicly traded multi-billion dollar companies within the space of 5 years. And so,
yeah.
You know, it behooves us to basically get in on the ground floor and grow with our clients rather than, you know, knocking on their door for the first time after they become,
right,
you know,
after
name.
They're it. they got it.
Exactly.
You know, they ain't even looking for nobody because everybody's
That's
looking
right.
for them.
That's
so.
Right.
But yeah, it's been a pleasure. Let me walk you guys. Oh, yeah,
All
come
right,
on.
Let me get,
take some
yeah,
pictures.
Yeah, and you, send the chair there real quick yeah. so I can get... And just animate yourself a little bit like you're having a conversation.
Should
and
I do this?
Yeah, yeah.
That, that makes it look real.
Yeah.
All right, but you got to act like you're talking and animate the way you are.
So this was really a beautiful session. I thought it went really well.
Carl, you killed it. I mean, I know you said I killed it, but...
No, you really did, though. You seem like you're an expert
here. You killed it. And what I love about it is you seem to enjoy, you know, what you do. And, you know, so I think that came through really well. Now, did you get enough?
Yep. Nah, you actually made it. It felt very... Yeah, it felt very organic, man. Let me see if I can get the HUR in the background there. All right, very well. Thanks.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll reach out to Sharon again. But I'm really thinking maybe whenever you have, like, even this specialized topic as it relates to issues, you know, mm-hmm. you could even zone in or dive in a little bit deeper.
Hey, even if you guys brought the topic, right.
Thanks.
We've been looking for, you know, a law firm with some lawyers coming out to, you know, do what you did. I mean, you're not giving legal advice, we know that. You got to put the disclaimer out there for people that, oh, well, they were talking just like what I needed. No. You need to have a sit down before you make that decision. You know? But and then we can talk about that some more as well, because we're always, you know, I'm counseling over 500 businesses. We have 567 businesses come through my shop so far this year. And we do a wide range of things. We have workshops, we do one-on-one counseling, which is free. Workshops are low cost or free. We go out into the public, like yesterday, one of my staff persons was out at a women's business luncheon in Baltimore. I'm actually, three of them are gonna do this. There's a deaf business conference at Gallaudet Friday and Saturday. Three of them will be doing one-on-one counseling tomorrow afternoon, and then I'll be doing a workshop for them on Saturday afternoon. So we're out there doing a lot of stuff, and you know, really trying to bring those folks, capture them, convert them into clients. So that's what we do.
Yeah, well, good. And you may, I don't know, it's a small world, but our IP lawyer is actually based here in the D.C. area and actually teaches a class.
Oh, yeah?
So I don't know if you know Tom Peterson.
Nah, I haven't had it. You know, because law school's on the outside of town. We love to get him on the show as well.
Yeah, so that can be arranged.
Yeah. So, but hey, it was a pleasure.
All right,
Nice meeting you.
Pleasure, Carl.
Thank you.
We'll follow up.
All right. Okay. Take care.
You too now. Well,
yeah,
man. We're gonna part of the secret plan behind the scenes is we got to put some optics on this thing as well. You can't be a thought leader without the optics. So both in terms of other firms as well as like money, it's time to sit them down.
No, young one, you're a small breed.
Small breed.
First one is young. You're a small breed.
What time is your train so that we can plan on that?
7 something.
Alright, so.
7, 12 or something.
Downside going to school up this way. We're gonna have plenty of like money.
Plenty of like money.
What to do with this?
That's why. Didn't we get the money? Why? What's it? Two of them here.
Now, man. That's what we use now as a. You get the class by teaching it. That's what we have a classroom. One girl. It's down on the library stacks thinking of you. I was so turned on, I was fucking myself.
It must be tough.
Listen, man.
It must be tough knowing to burn. You
another fucking hen. I was like, yeah, fuck them.
It's my mentor, man. Them fuck all of them. Them come last week, and I'm coming for homecoming, and 62 years old. But them say, yeah, man, I fuck one of them, but